Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
And I'm curious, because they seem to be just adding and subtracting players constantly, that I'm curious what they're going to be doing with the show after the midseason break. Any thoughts? Nobody cares.
Nobody cares about things Charles talks about.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Breaking the Panel, the best show on the internet where we talk about the permeation of comic books and all kinds of media. Tonight, will we actually do that? Who knows? But I'm TV's Casey, your once and forever host, here with the ever gregarious Charles McFall.
You're the host with a capital T, the host? What the hell, man?
With a capital T and a capital H.
That's what second billing feels like, Charles.
Yeah, you'd know if you let anybody else do the intro.
You didn't even get the branding right, man. That's okay.
What do you mean?
I'm the rock out of podcasting, Charles McFall. You're TV's Casey, ain't you?
Well, I'm not in love with the name anymore. I think it's kind of worn its knee out, to be honest with you.
None of us were ever in love with the Rock God of podcasting.
Self-proclaimed.
The alleged.
And that glove don't fit.
I'm okay. I like myself, and gosh darn it, people like me.
Not good optics right now, Charles.
Yeah. Oh crap! I forgot that was him. Oh. Oh my goodness! You're right. My bad.
Good job.
Carry on, Casey. You're doing a bad
job. Sitting on the other side of the table is the always a gloomy Gus, but we love him anyway. Paul Klotz.
What?
Yes. What you talking about, Willis?
Man, used to open it with howdy or something. Like, it wasn't a cowboy thing, but you had a little thing before. I was like, oh, I missed a happy class before I beat him into depression.
And your favorite soon to be replaced person and mine.
Oh my god. Oh, crap.
Chris Wisdom.
Yeah. That stings a little bit.
This might be the first and last time Casey gets to open the show.
I figured I just wanted to get it all out on the table. Hey, can we redo that?
Nope. It's canon.
That's awesome, man. Just so everybody knows, this is episode 99. Episode 100 is next week, and we're going to do a big reminiscent favorite moments of the show. We'll talk to each other about what it took to get to 100 and all that other jazz. And if you've got anything you'd like to submit or say, you can email us btp@giantsizedteamup.com. And you can go to giantsizedteamup.com/breakingthepanel and leave a voicemail right there in the speak pipe. And that'd be awesome. Then after that, if you have a favorite moment in the show, we're going to start the next year. We're going to end the year for us recording wise, but start the next year for the first show that you get to hear as a clip show. We're going to put our favorite moments up that we've cut out from the year. And for me, I'm going a little bit further back because I want to do my favorite moments of the hosts and what I like about the hosts that I get to work with. So I'm looking a little bit deeper on those cuts. But if you got your favorite moment of the show, you're free to let us know what it is and we'll play on that. But you know what? We forgot. I've lost track, right? We were doing something for a little while that I really enjoyed, and it was, what's the cool, fun thing you've done this week? What have you watched? What have you played? What have you read? And Klotz, you've got a little something that you said you picked up this week, or at least we're playing with.
Oh, that's ambiguous.
It's almost a board game. I don't know. What
do you want to do? No, I just, like, never mind. Your phrase thing is...
What?
Phrasing is always directly on the nose, Charles. As
always. What does he mean by ambiguous?
So I picked up the new version of Necromunda over the weekend, which, if you're not an uber nerd like me, is a Games Workshop, quote unquote, board game. Originally it came out back in the 90s, so it's been about 20 years since the first version of it came out. The basic gist of it is it's a skirmish style game it's a side property to Warhammer 40,000, the popular tabletop war game, where it takes place on these planets they're called Hive Worlds, where there's lots of people who live there, and so it's kind of got like your cyberpunk gang type thing going on. It's all about gang warfare and stuff like that. But it comes with miniatures that you have to, cut off of sprues and glue together and paint and all that fun hobby stuff. And
you mean you got to put in work for your action figures?
Oh yeah. Like I may never actually get to play the game because it'll take forever to put everything together.
Dude, you know what that's like? It's like when you were a kid and you set up all your Star Wars figures together to get them in for one big picture, and you'd plan it out that you'd act them, like you'd have them act out scenarios, but you'd get so exhausted by the time you set them all up, you'd just be like, ah, forget it.
Yeah, I've never done that, but...
Oh, so just my lonely, lonely, sad childhood action figures then.
I was going to say I can commiserate with Paul because I was the kid with the 1941 board game that I would tell my friends, oh, this is awesome, it's great, you want to play it? And then you'd spend the, requisite 45 minutes getting everything set up, by which time they were bored and over it. You're just like, no, please, can we start playing? Hey, look,
Nintendo.
Right. Yeah, it's so like that. But what I wanted to say is I was really impressed. The component quality is really nice. There's a lot of value in the box for what it is, which is, it brings me to a topic that I wanted to bring up, particularly because in the wake of everything that's been going on with EA and Star Wars Battlefront 2 and, just this overall sense of like backlash and everything in the community towards companies that are showing a little bit of a greedier side to what they do. Games Workshop has been the EA of tabletop gaming for at least a decade. Basically, they've been the black sheep, if you will, where like they have these wildly successful product lines, like strong IPs and everything, but their business model was choking out like stores and choking out like massively driving up prices on figures and stuff to play their games, and their rule sets were getting switched out like every 2 years or so, and it was driving people crazy because the books to keep up on the game systems were expensive. What kind of brought me back around to this is they got a new CEO about 2 years ago, 18 months to 2 years ago, and they've really turned it around in the last year. So they were known for being way too expensive, way too greedy, all of that stuff, and now they're putting out some pretty solid stuff that is really good quality for the components, but also at decent pricing. I mean, it's not cheap. Like this was over $100 for this board game. I turned Magic cards into this board game, so it wasn't over $100 for me. It was just, a whole bunch of Magic cards. But, it's not Monopoly. You know what I mean? It's not something you just grab off the shelf for like $20 and you're good to go. It's a big investment and everything, but like you're getting a lot for your investment now. And it really made me want to bring up the fact that I think like keep an open mind, because I was like, absolutely of the attitude like screw Games Workshop because they were so bad in the industry, you know what I mean, for the last 10 years, like seriously, like they were so bad that they deleted all their social media accounts.
Ooh.
Like they just, because they got so much negative feedback for the decisions they were making all the time and they didn't care. But they seem to have turned a new leaf and they're turning it around, and I just want to say, keep that in mind. Because companies can change. I mean, sometimes they don't. A lot of times they don't. You know what I mean? But they can surprise you. And so, if you're a big EA fan and you're real upset with them right now, you're probably going to be upset with them forever because I don't see that changing. But then, you know what? If you asked me 3 years ago if Games Workshop would ever change the way they do business, I would have been like, no, clearly not. And that's not been the case. It's been... They've done a kind of an about face. So cool game. If you're into that kind of stuff, you can check it out. There's a bunch of videos on YouTube and stuff. Maybe if I get everything painted up at some point, I'll take some pictures and put them up on our social media to show people, but no promises, because that could take forever.
So you're saying promise me no promises?
Yeah, basically. That'll happen around the same time that I launch my gaming show that I wanted to do like a year and a half ago.
That's fair. That's
or any of the other shows we're soon to expect from Paul Kahn.
Hey! Those aren't all on me.
One of them's on me. I'll take that.
Speaking of EA, you know, I saw going around the internet on Black Friday, I think it's a picture from Walmart where it's the empty game case where all games have been bought except Star Wars Battlefront 2. So
and the new Sonic game. Because it's also terrible.
Well, honestly, you know, since the '90s, all Sonic games have been fairly terrible. And while Sonic was nostalgically fun, I don't know that arguably it was good. But that's neither here nor there right now. Locally, and I'm sure this probably happens in different radio markets throughout the U.S. and maybe even the world, as your local radios go. But you can pay to be on the air on the weekends on the radio. And a lot of times in my area, it's financial stuff, financial planning, and all that crap, right? And it's almost the same generic thing. It's just a commercial for come do our thing. But I like talk radio, and I kind of hate pop music because you just hear the same three songs over and over. So I'll tolerate the financial planning just to have somebody talking. And what cracked me up, I was like, I know I have to remember this. I have to bring this to the show. So the guy ran his partner over, much like I do you guys, wearing just a cold throw. He's like, hey, Bob, you love microtransactions, don't you? And obviously, Bob had no clue what he was talking about. It's like, yeah, uh-huh, yeah.
I'm all about them. Microtransactions. Yeah. Are you kidding?
And being that it's a financial show, at first, I thought they were going to talk something about maybe there's a trading thing or whatever. And he said something next, and it was obvious Bob had no clue. He was just trying to play along. But instead of letting him play along, the guy calls him out. Right? Oh, I know you don't know, but you know, Electronic Arts, they call him EA. Electronic Arts, you know, basically EA was going to be their pick of the week because they'd made this blunder because they've released Star Wars Galactica the Second.
Oh, God, my stomach just turned a little. That was so awful.
I know. And I'm like, oh my God, how do I find this to actually, I want to play the actual clip on the show. And I'm like, Star Wars Galactica the Second, what are you doing? And some producer or something corrected him. So when he said it again, he did say Star Wars Battlefront. He didn't say two or the second, he just said Star Wars Battlefront. And basically he was talking about how they'd made a blunder and their shares were dropping. But he thinks he'll be back, and here's, they've got a long term history of doing well in the market. I'm like, you really need to get off this gaming thing, man. You have no idea what you're talking about. Now, for trading as a monetary company, they've done strong enough, but they've always done horribly for people in this range. But that Star Wars, that needs to be one of our new T-shirts for the new year. Star Wars Galactica the Second.
Yeah. Yeah, the funny thing is, like there was a accreditation firm, or not accreditation, I'm sorry, an evaluation firm that apparently is estimating that their losses from the whole Battlefront 2 debacle is like over $2 billion worth.
That's like a Dr. Evil's worth of money. $2 billion!
Yeah, no, and that's the thing is they're seriously projecting that the damage is well beyond rational comprehension. I mean, and so it's hard to, I don't think EA has released numbers yet. We'll probably know next year when they do an investor quarterly report. We'll hear more. But they certainly took a beating. I mean, there's definitely plenty of people who didn't buy the game that were going to otherwise. Because of everything and whatnot. But it's really interesting because something that cracked me up is one of the subreddits that I subscribe to is called Patient Gamers, and it's mostly PC gamers, but it's people who wait for a game to be out for a while and then buy it on the cheap. You know, basically the idea is like, is this really going to be worth my money? And I'll just grab it later when it's discounted, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they've been doing all the, they covered it a little bit and everything, you know what I mean? But like, and that community is just not going to buy in, you know? I mean, if they're not going to buy a game at $60, they're certainly not going to buy a game at $60 and then do microtransactions as well. But kind of in a side note to the whole thing, they cracked me up because last week all the subreddits were doing stuff about net neutrality. Like they had these big red banners up and like, you know, pinned posts and everything about like, you know, this is where you go to contact your local everybody who's going to ignore you anyways because they're all on the payroll of telecom. Anyways, so they did it and they're like, now that the hype has died down on this whole microtransactions and net neutrality thing, maybe it's time that we should start paying attention to it. And it just cracked me up because it was like, oh man, don't lose your sense of humor, gamers. Don't lose your sense of humor.
Yeah, no, right? Casey, what have you been playing, reading, or watching this week?
Well, I've been trying to clear out a whole bunch of games in my Steam library. But I, in between doing a lot of work, and, you know, idle work and being able to watch stuff in the background while I work, I've been making headway through Batman the Animated Series and New Batman Adventures, and now I'm up to Superman the Animated Series. And I plan on going all the way through Batman Beyond and Justice League and Unlimited and round out the whole DCAU. But I put that on hold because I just started playing Batman Arkham Asylum for the very first time.
Ah, how was it for you?
It is something truly spectacular. I like, people have like raved and adored and loved this whole series of games forever, except for the mixed bag that Arkham Origins got. But even then, it's got its people who sing its praises. But you really feel like you're Batman. Like, it's it's just incredible. The combat, being able to throw batarangs, the motion, being able to move around, just the way that Kevin Conroy still delivers his lines in the dynamic DC fashion.
Yeah.
I played maybe 2 hours of it, and I'm losing my mind, ready to claw at the walls and jump right back in. But I've got a lot of DC on the brain, which is rare for me, and not our Kansas farm boy native over here. But, you know, I'm feeling it again, because I was bigger into DC when I was a kid than Marvel. So it's a nice little walk down memory lane.
That's cool. I remember when I first played and beat Arkham Asylum. That is the first game that made me feel, as a gamer, made me feel like I was Batman in the game, right? Because you got the detective stuff, you got the stealth, but you got the fighting moves.
You tap one button and you go into detective mode. It's so cool.
It was great. The ending was fun. I have not beaten the other games. I've played them some, but that first one was great. I'm glad you finally got it taken care of.
I just can't. I'm like, what am I, 6 years late on this? It's unbelievable.
Hey, it comes when it comes, right? You know, you're the 40-year-old virgin. It's all right.
Ugh. Arkham Asylum's only 6 years old?
No, I think it's older than that.
I figured that's got to be getting close to the decade mark.
2009. All right, eight years old.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So not quite as far as... I was with Chris. I thought it was closer to a decade.
Well, it has aged extremely well.
Yes.
Yeah, no, they put a lot of work. And that's Rocksteady? A Rockstar, yeah. Rocksteady that did that.
No, Rocksteady, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty far ahead of the curve with those games.
Yeah. I mean, would you guys say that they kind of set the new bar for games when they came out with those?
Well, for the genre, sure. Well, yeah, because basically what they did is they took the Assassin's Creed style gameplay, but adapted it so well. Like, they picked the perfect property, you know what I mean? Like, you could do something similar with, like, Spider-Man, but it wouldn't be quite the same. But the fact that they, like, they've got all the detective aspects into it and everything, at least in the first game. I own a couple of the others, but I haven't dabbled with them yet. I've been meaning to. But like they did a lot of really cool and inventive things, you know, and the story is great. Like getting good voice work and getting a good story in there is always going to really help. I know, I think it was either the third game or something like that. Calendar Man's in it, I think. And there's actually like special events with Calendar Man on holidays and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is, and that's just a little detail that you're just like, wow. You know what I mean? Like, that's amazing. Like,
I remember the hack was you could get offline and change the date on your, I had it on Xbox, on your Xbox to the holiday, and then you'd get the event triggered in the game. Yeah.
Because who has time to revisit a game months and months down the line?
Like, you're going to remember it. You know you're not going to remember
it. Yeah, it'd be like, oh, crud, it's Valentine's Day. I forgot to turn on Batman, a game I haven't touched in 6 months.
One of my good buddies and fan of the show, Jimbo Dico, used to go home on holidays early so that he could go play the Calendar Man thing. So there are people. Yeah, of course, he's one of the biggest Batman fans on the planet. But yeah, like, yeah. So there are people. And when he hears this, I'm sure I'm going to get a text message about it.
Happy Mother's Day, Mom. Sorry, I got to go. I'm meeting a Calendar Man.
Yeah, pretty. Like, no, he drives a couple hours every Christmas to go spend it with his sister and her kids and everything. And they do a whole family thing. And my sister and I have gone out there and hung out with them a bunch of times. It's great. But like, he's always like he's pointing at his watch at some point on Christmas Day where he's like, all right, it's time to go. Like, we got to get back in time for me to go play Arkham for a bit. And so it's awesome. Just funny. Yeah.
Christoph Wisdom, what have you been doing this week that you love?
I've been working my hardest, most diligently, to finally get caught up on the comic book shows. And so I finally finished Crisis on Earth X, and Crisis on Earth X went ahead and did the same thing that pissed me off about DC Batman Metal. And I don't understand the concept of a multiverse on top of a multiverse.
Dark multiverse, you say? DC's greatest concept since Hyper Time?
It is such a crap concept. You either have a multiverse or you don't have a multiverse. Once you've decided that you have a multiverse, you can't then have a multiverse of the multiverse. Because guess what that is? That's just more multiverse. It's literally just more multiverse. And when you make it sound like it's a special thing, it's dumb. It's dumb. And they like, I liked Crisis on Earth X, but they've decided conveniently that, ooh, there's a 53rd world, and it is so horrible that the other Earths have decided it shall not be named, and that is why it is deemed Earth X. And not only that, but then they go ahead and screw up. So when they first introduced Supergirl into the Arrowverse, they introduced it as a parallel world, one of the 52 Earths, that on this Earth there was no Barry, there was no Oliver, there was Supergirl, and on the other Earths there was no Supergirl. It's so far, the ones that they've gone into, there was no Supergirl. Well, now they're saying that there's 52 other Kara's. Like, figure it out, guys. I'm cool with it, but just come on. You guys are this is why Crisis on Infinite Earths happened, because you guys.
This is why they should have just made her part of the universe since the beginning.
You're absolutely correct, but...
Oh, that's why they should never have had it on CBS.
Well,
CW passed. I mean, they passed on it. That's why I went to CBS.
But how could you pass on that single Kryptonian female making it out on her own in the big city as a plot line?
Sounds like you just described Mary Tyler Moore with a cape.
Well, who could have expected that show would have gone from such mediocre beginnings to... being, you know, having some real highlights in it. Because I hear people say good things about it now, when before it was like, it was so easy to write off.
See, I never found it easy to write off. I did have my issues at the first season, but I think the good definitely outweighed the bad.
I mean, it's got a Superman that smiles.
I was, and seeing that Superman, I was upset when they brought him in, because they did such a good job in that first season of showing she doesn't need Superman to be a viable show, and then to just bring him in, and not only bring him in, but like force him down our throat. What, twice in the second season?
Yeah.
So, and he's not that good of a Superman either. He's really not.
I mean, he's got blue heat vision. That's already working against both of those. Why is it blue? Someone explain this to me.
We've gone over this. We've gone over this. It's that hot.
It's not that it's hotter. It can't. It's that's that so dumb.
It's that hot. Oh, but a dark multiverse is the tits. Come on.
Oh, listen, dark multiverse. We'll go. We're going rounds. It's got negative numbers. That's how evil it is.
It's no. It's already a part of the multiverse. There's no flips. There can't be a tails to the head side of a multiverse. That makes no sense.
Yeah. We only want one negative Earth, and that's Earth C minus with the just a lot of animals. Captain Carrot characters.
Our Earth is the negative Earth, isn't it?
Nah, baby, we're like Earth Prime or something.
Yeah, we are.
No, I mean, like, quite literally. Have you looked at what's going on in our society?
Oh, you mean our actual Earth?
Oh, yes.
Actual Earth is Earth negative.
We've got some kind of Hellboy Hell on Earth deal going on in California right now.
Right?
That's yeah.
Crazy.
You know, good luck and gosh bless to everybody out there, but geez, not doing 2018 any favors here.
Yeah. So, taking it back to happier things. Well, I've been catching up on the superhero shows. I've got the one last episode of Arrow to watch to then be able to do Crisis on Earth X or whatever it is, 4-part crossover. I'm almost done with Punisher. I think I've got 2 episodes left or so. It's really good. I'm really enjoying that. And you know, I'm still playing XCOM and Tales from the Borderlands. Borderlands is one of my favorite shooter games of all time. And I love Telltale Games and the fact that they did a Borderlands 1. It's free on Xbox One currently till the mid-December mark. You can get that for free, and I did. That's how I pretty much play most of my games. But the one I wanted to ask Klotz about, you referenced Warhammer. Currently on Xbox One through the end of December, you can get Warhammer The End of Times Vermintide. I watched a little trailer. It didn't look like something I would care about. Is that something I should care about?
Not now. That title's kind of sunsetting because they're working on a second one. But what that was is an up to 4-player. It was basically kind of a horde game. Like you would pick one of the 4, or well, there's a couple of different characters, but you could have up to 4 party members with you. They could be friends, or you could get random matched, and you would each play a different character. That had different weapons and powers and stuff, and then you would fight hordes of Skaven, which are Ratmen.
Okay.
It was cool. It was fun. My normal play group for online games, we played it when it first came out. It was kind of rough early on, but they worked out a lot of the kinks as time went on. But I wouldn't think that there's probably that many people still playing it at this point. They're probably mostly waiting for the new one.
There might be a surge right now because it's the free game this month. Mm-hmm. for
oh, well, yeah, that's true as well.
But everything you're saying, I'm even free is like, nah, I'm good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got bored with it pretty quickly, but it could be a lot better now.
Yeah, I'm waiting for them to make Rocket League free, and then I'll play crap out of that week. I'll be like, every other play that I screw up, it's just a game, Claude. I don't understand what you're mad about. It's just a game, man. And nobody laughed, but that was a throwback to Dragon Con where he did a whole awesome panel on It's Just a Game. Now, you know, in reality, I wouldn't actually troll you. I'd listen and I'd be a good Padawan and I would do my best.
No, you would not.
He'd be one of those ball chasers.
Oh, mouth breather.
Chris, you don't even. We have literally, quite literally, never played a single game together for any reason.
Yes, we have.
Cards Against Humanity doesn't count.
We've played Dungeons and Dragons, and I will not repeat that experience.
Oh, you know, you guys played Kick the Can, but Chris was the can.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I learned it from you, Daddy. I learned it from you. I
think they may have preferred playing with Can Kicker Charles. As opposed to Huckle the Clown.
Oh, no. Hashtag triggered.
All right. So moving on to some news here. This is probably what everybody's talking about, but I know it's got all the geekdom and uproar. It's the Will They, Won't They game that Fox and Disney is playing, and it turns out that Fox and Comcast is playing at the same time. But the short version is, it is public knowledge and confirmed that Fox and Disney are in talks and they're closing in on a deal. Fox is also talking to Comcast currently, but it's not going nearly as well. And they're valued, the deal is valued at, I think I read $30 billion.
60, isn't it?
60 billion, something like that. It's a lot. It is a lot of money, man. So I didn't know if you guys had anything you want to expand on. I think it was Chris and Casey both threw in headlines about this in the chat. Is there really any speculation we need to do at this point other than saying, hey, keep an eye on it?
At this point, no. I mean, everybody's, you know, waiting in and is looking for that X-Men MCU crossover to happen, and, you know, or the Fantastic Four coming back, which from a fan standpoint, yes, I want all of that. I want all of that. But as a fan of the MCU, I don't want it done to the detriment of the MCU. So they need to have time. Like, I don't want to expect this as a fan to be the subject of the next movie at post Infinity War, because I want them to have time to digest and do the stories appropriately, bring them into the universe appropriately, and not do it too quick like certain other movie universes do it or chose to do it.
Yeah.
But for me, I've been saying, you know, from the beginning, like, I'm more excited about getting Fox fanfare before Lucasfilm LTD on a Star Wars movie than anything. That's the prospect that I'm most excited about.
All right. Yeah, that's fair. So
I heard through a sports fan grapevine, because I am the furthest thing from a sports fan, that most of this buy may have been motivated due to, like ESPN, like getting its tail kicked by Fox Sports.
But they're not getting Fox Sports. I think they're getting the region.
It says the regionals are in.
Regionals. They're regionals. But not Fox Sports proper.
Yeah, one of the reports I saw was Fox Sports News and some other stuff were completely out of the deal.
Man, if Disney bought Fox News and just decided to end it because it's nowhere near family friendly, what a world.
But then you wouldn't have truth out there.
No. Real news?
I prefer Robot Chicken too. Moving on. This was definitely interesting, and I'm not sure how I honestly feel about it, because I love the two different things in this story. I'm not sure if we should put them together, but Quentin Tarantino is apparently seriously pitching doing a Star Trek film for Paramount. And he's pushing this hard. Have you guys heard about this yet?
Yes, and that's why you don't drop F-bombs on the bridge. I love you, Quentin, but look what you've done, Netflix and CBS All Access. Look what you've done.
It's because as soon as they started dropping it, all of a sudden Quentin's like, hey, I heard my mantra. Can I play? Can I go in?
Now he's like, okay, let me see. Let's see if we can do The Hateful Eight in space.
Somebody's getting shot in the dick.
Wait. Right. No, the transporter malfunctions all the time and blood just sprays everywhere.
Oh.
Yeah, they find a planet that's filled with Yakuza hitmen. And they just got to battle it out. Like,
no, it's one long holodeck thing that does that, but it just goes from one Tarantino film to another through the holodeck where they have to.
Okay. As a fan of Tarantino, I don't want to say that he can't take something else and do it well, but he's never done that before.
We've just seen him do the one kind of thing.
He does his thing, which is great.
Yeah.
But it's his thing. It's kind of like Tarantino films are like Mojoverse. You know, I mean, it's just
I've got to watch it, baby.
It's just this thing. It's like, we like seeing him do his take on all the different genres. That's great. But I don't know. It seems that he and JJ will be working like hand in hand on this, though. From one of the articles I read, made it sound like they were collabing a lot on it. I don't know. Well,
because he shopped it to JJ. JJ's like, it's a good idea. Now we need to put it in front of a room with actual Star Trek writers. Is what it sounded like. Yeah.
But is there enough time in a JJ Abrams Star Trek film to focus on feet and have a whole bunch of monologues that are about nothing, like hamburgers from other planets and stuff.
They might shoot Marvin.
Like,
yeah.
Looney Tunes Marvin?
No, Marvin, man.
Oh.
His what happened to the earth-shattering kaboom?
Thank you. That, now, use that voice and tell me to say what again.
No. Say what again, Earthman? Does he look like a bitch?
No, that's...
Too soon. No. I want you to do the entire...
the whole bit?
The entire monologue.
No.
The entire...
No, not that.
I'm fond of your big kahuna burger.
No. Just weird. I can't now. Plus, it's not very good. It's like halfway between what it's supposed to be and my equally bad Kermit the Frog impression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But giving it, I'm giving it half a shot.
Can you do Kermit saying, be cool, honey bunny?
So now it's a Muppet Looney Tunes Pulp yeah. Fiction crossover. We're going real far down the line here.
Oh, man. Chris could do his Tarantino as William Shatner and just do that one.
Yeah.
No? Okay.
I kind of want to imagine that it's Kermit and Fozzie as Vic and yeah. Jules. So it's like, give me a wallet. And it's like,
it's the one in there that says bad mother on it.
Like, I don't know.
I'd rather hear Kermit doing Mr. Pink telling me why he doesn't tip. Bear can roll in and tell him just leave a tip.
All right, no, we're dragging out. We got to move on here.
You get one guy who does goofy voices on your show, you lose complete control.
Yeah. You know, this that would be the thing. That's going to be the little spinoff for patrons. Is we just talk about the most random of things, and you'll never know where our brain goes. But it's going to be. It'll be worth paying for, I promise.
BTP, crossover madness.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, you know what? Boom, boom, boom. I'm making a note for after the show. All right. So here we go. Now, this is possible spoilers if you really care about DC Legends of Tomorrow. I like the show. I don't know that you could. Nothing's a, oh, my God, they did that. It's just a fun kind of comedic action cheesy romp for me. I enjoy it, but nothing spoils.
If anything, it's still the best of those shows, isn't it?
To me, yes. But, you know, I also
just
like
Abrams. It kind of nails its source material. Like, it nails the whole idea of just being a fun comic show.
I think so. That's my take on it. So, in that vein, there are no such things as spoilers, really. But this could be spoilers for people, so I'm just giving that warning in case you care. But another founding member of the cast is leaving. We already have seen Victor Garber, Martin Stein, being set up to leave throughout the show. And they've been obviously pushing that way with some very obvious storylines and whatnot. Because I obviously rarely read the news other than what we talk about here on the show. But it's obvious in the show. And when he's part of a two-man team, I've been wondering what they're going to do with Jax, because I don't really care for Jax. I mean, his acting's okay. What they've done with the character is a little weak. They could have done more. Some of the goofiness they've done this season with the two characters of Stein and Jax are eh. But then it turns out the actor who plays Jax, I'm going to try my best to say his name, Franz Drammen, I think is how you pronounce that. He has officially left the cast of CW's DC Legends of Tomorrow. So Firestorm currently is no more on that show after the mid-season break. And, I'm not sure if actually he'll leave before the midseason break or when he's leaving, but he is going to be leaving. But they've left the door open, of course, as they always do for their actors to return. And I'm curious because they seem to be just adding and subtracting players constantly that I'm curious what they're going to be doing with the show after the midseason break. Any thoughts? Nobody cares.
Nobody cares about things Charles talks about.
No, that's fair. I just found it interesting and moving on.
I mean, I think that's the nature of Legends, though, is people are going to come and go and maybe come back. And because the article also mentioned Wentworth Miller is leaving, too, for good, it would seem.
Yeah, I'm kind of upset with his exit.
What?
A little bit on this Crisis on Earth X. They brought him back, and they're going to bring him back for a little bit. And I'm just not thrilled with this portrayal.
We'll have to see what he's doing with it.
Oh yeah, it's to me, it's very caricature of what he's portraying. And I mean, maybe it's not. Maybe that's just me taking offense. Where there
is it Captain Cold breaking out of prison, because you don't get more typecast than that.
That's true.
No, it's not. I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
And then, and just because Crisis on Earth X is so fresh, and people are still catching up on it, but they introduce another hero that will be interesting to see in the how he interacts in Legends. So,
well, if it's
kind of excited about
it. If it's not John Constantine, I quote the great philosopher Tina Turner: "We don't need another hero."
We don't need another hero.
Sorry, I really, really love Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. So. I got to belt it out every time.
I love my memory of it, because I was 12 when I saw it on NBC's Movie of the Week. Yeah, because that's the only way I was going to get to see a Mad Max movie, is if it was on broadcast TV with all the bad parts cut out.
Ah.
I was very sheltered as a kid. Yeah. But to the Wentworth Miller thing, I mean, I don't know how they did it. I'm just saying, him leaving the show, he left to go do Prison Break, the redo or the return or wherever the hell it was.
Revenge of the Prison Break. Prison Break 2, Electric Boogaloo.
/ Killer Tomatoes. So
whatever happened with that? Did that fizzle out?
I Fox pushed it for a while. I have no idea, because I didn't. After the second season, I never watched it.
It probably fizzled out just like the Heroes reboot.
Yeah, the Heroes reboot was not good. It was okay.
It was just more bad.
Yeah.
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 It premiered on April 4th, 2017, and ended on May 30th, 2017.
Yeah, it's a straight run. Oh, that runs
like a month and a half.
Yeah, but that's when there was a special run. It wasn't like, we're bringing the seasons back, we're going to do 5 new seasons. It was kind of a special run. So that's what, 6 to 8 episodes, somewhere in there?
Well, it kind of reminds me of the end of Warehouse 13. Where they brought it back for like a short half season just to wrap up all the plot lines.
But speaking of coming back, the X-Files is returning in 2018 with all the cast members, and the commercials I've seen for it looks pretty awesome. It looks like they're going a little bit darker, a little bit more gritty, but still keeping some of that funny twist to it.
For those of you keeping track at home, it's now come back 3 times, which I think is as many as Michael Jordan's professional sports career.
Well, to be fair, this isn't really a third comeback. This is still on the heels of that last 10 episode arc that was last year.
Yeah.
This is just a continuation of this. So this isn't a completely new comeback. And I really enjoyed the last season. I wasn't a big X-Files guy. Like it started getting me to go through on Hulu or Netflix, wherever it was, to start watching back catalog and stuff.
Yeah.
And there are definitely some episodes that are better than others.
Yep.
But I think last season was really good. And I think it did a really good job of showcasing in just those 10, it was only 10 episodes, wasn't it?
It's 8 or 10. It was less than 12 for sure.
I think it did a really good job of showcasing that whole, from what I've seen of the first 2 seasons of the show, hitting all the highlights that each season tend to do. You know, you had your silly episode, you did your monsters.
It's actually only 6.
Is it only 6?
It's only 6.
So then so even in a shorter time frame, you really boiled X-Files down to what I, as a casual fan of X-Files, really picked up part about that show, or what I noticed about that show as being that the commonalities did really well. I was excited to see, and I can't remember their names, but the blonde one from The Lone Gunman.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't remember the name either.
Yeah, because I did watch that when it was on TV. I liked that show, The Lone
Gunman. All 2 episodes that aired, I think it was.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I'm with you, Chris. I thought the heart of X-Files was the monster of the week, the I Want to Believe out kind of vibe. I did like some of the overarching, you know, Smoker and the powers
the myth
that
arc,
be,
if you will.
Yeah, but it got a little crazy. It did. It got a little out of hand, and I didn't like what they did with the end of it. But I did enjoy that six episode run. And Reese Darby, Reese Darby, Reese,
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 Reese Darby. That episode he was on, total left field kind of episode, but so much fun. Mm-hmm. That episode was so much fun. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. One last thing before we hit the break here, and we got some cool stuff coming up after the break. But this is interesting. I think I would agree here. The Crow's directors say any remake would be wrong. And I would have to say anything beyond The Crow has absolutely been wrong. It's just been a mess. But Alex Proyas, director of the 1994 cult film The Crow, he's talked on several occasions about basically it was just his passion and this one story focus. It wasn't supposed to be a franchise. And of course, as we know in Hollywood, everything comes up for a reboot or a rehash or let's rework this or bring it back. And his stance is it's The Crow is not worth doing if it's not Brandon Lane. Of course, it can't be.
Brandon Lee? He kept saying Lane. Did he say Lane or Lee?
He said Lee.
Let me take off my twang for you.
Let me take off that twang. Dun, 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 dun. No, wait, sorry. That's Appalachia. We're home to our beloved friends of the Botch podcast.
I gotta say, I would be partially open-minded if I saw that The Crow was being remade as a new film. Apparently, here's a little footnote I missed. Davis Films, Highland Film Group, and Electric Shadow are currently overseeing a new film titled The Crow Reborn with actor Jason Momoa and director Corin Hardy penciled in to be on the project. So this is all pre-production stuff. I like Momoa, but it was just one of those moments in time, right? It just hit. It was different. I loved it. It really spoke to me in a dark time in my life. What did you guys, do you guys have fond memories of The Crow? Do you want it rebooted? Do you care?
Well, I mean, it has that built-in mechanism. The story itself has that built-in mechanism of rebirth and redoing of these movies. So if they don't go back and try to tell that story again, I mean, that's fine.
Look, he's been reborn into an actor 100 pounds heavier.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing. I mean, because The Crow, it wasn't always that same, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
I'm pretty sure it was always Draven. But
okay, I could be wrong. For some reason, I was thinking that in The Crow that it was reborn more than once because it's not just...
Well, yeah, theoretically, from what I understand, theoretically, it's the spirit. It's kind of like a Ghost Rider almost. It's the spirit of vengeance comes back when it's needed. So it's never just one person. Theoretically, I don't know what they did in the comics, and what they did in the films was really kind of bad. Other than the first one.
I mean, I don't think it's like Grendel, where it's a whole series of different people under the same, like, guise.
I don't know about a whole bunch, but yeah, and I don't think the lineage is as far back as Ghost Rider either, but I thought that there was something to that story aspect. I could be wrong. I wasn't a regular reader of The Crow. I think I only read a few issues about the time that movie came out. So,
I feel like there's probably enough existing iterations for all the edgelords and emos to bet themselves to. So,
because that kind of was a little too old for you when it came out, wasn't it, Klotz?
Not really. I mean, I watched it as like a teenager or a preteen or whatever. It's just, I've never really, I mean, I saw the original. It was cool and all. I do distinctly recall my sister being like, hey, this Crow movie's coming out. It looks pretty cool. And my sister's 12 years older than me. So she was an adult when I was, you know, when I was like young and then also as a teen and everything. But she would often be like my trailblazer for like cool stuff, you know, like cool music and cool movies and stuff. And so she was like, yeah, this Crow movie's coming out. Maybe we'll go see it together when it comes out. And I was like, cool. And then of course the tragedy happened on set.
Yeah.
Which led to it getting delayed. And then the next thing I know, like 2 or 3 years later, we rented or something back when you still rented things.
Yes.
And you know, we watched it after the fact, but like, it's fine at all. I don't understand the reverence for it, really. Like, I don't know. I just think it's your typically a little bit over the top, like 80s vibe, even though it was done in the early 90s, wasn't it? I think, or mid 90s.
I think it's, yeah, it's 90s. Got, it has a similar feel to like the Burton Batman. At least that's yeah. what I haven't seen this movie in maybe 10 years.
It's been a while.
I haven't seen this movie in like 15 or at least 15, I think. But yeah, I just don't. They keep trying to recapture what it was originally, because there is an audience for it, I guess. And I don't know that they're ever going to make those fans happy, though. You know what I mean?
Right. And to me, it was almost like the reverence for Heath Ledger's Joker, right? Just the style that he brought to that character. It was a
performance that got more acclaim than it maybe deserved.
I thought it was pretty phenomenal, to be honest.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's like the perfect. Okay, follow me though. I'm not saying he's the perfect Joker. I'm saying what he did on the screen, he left it all on the screen.
You know? Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. And I felt like Brandon Lee was the thing here. Is he left it all? Well, okay, I realize that could be a bad joke, and I'm not intending to make a bad joke because I know he died during the filming of this due to a tragic accident. But he left it all on the screen with the storytelling character.
Yeah. So here's some interesting trivia about The Crow. There's like 3.5 sequels.
Yeah.
That were like direct to DVD or video, which I had no idea about.
I think I've watched them all.
I would say the legacy of this film is already cheapened by the existence of these sequels already.
Sure.
And then looking into the character again, his origins are like, I know I just said it wasn't like Grendel where there's a whole bunch of different people.
No. Go ahead. When you say this, I want you to say it with, it must involve my 3 favorite words.
I was wrong.
No, I don't care. Charles about it. I knew that going in.
Oh.
What would be, Chris was right.
Chris was right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's actually kind of a combination of the way they did the masks in comics and also Grendel, where it's a bunch of different people, but they're all united by the same sort of figure, which is the spirit animal crow that resurrects them for their unfinished business.
Yeah.
Which is either left dubiously unfinished or finished, and they have that sort of dead man thing where it's like, oh, you may have thought you were done, but you have more work to do, and then it's never followed up on. So having Momoa as a crow named The Crow would not be the most far-fetched thing to see.
Yes.
No, I agree. Huh. I don't know, maybe it's one of those things where it's the time in life, and that's just how I choose to remember it. I do say that soundtrack, just it grabbed the crap out of me. And about that time in life, the original Doom was out, and it was one of the first video games I played on the PC, and the first game I ever played co-op over the modem, you know, where you had to dial up your buddy, and we would just crank the Crow soundtrack to that game, and it was the perfect soundtrack to that game. And it's just one of those times in my life where it's like the memory is probably better than the actual product. But I don't know. That's it. And like I said, I'd be open to it. Like Point Break, loved Point Break.
Holy crap! I'm looking at the track list now.
Yeah,
The Cure, Stone Temple Pilots, Nine Inch Nails, Rage Rollins. Against, Violent Femmes. Yeah, Rollins Band, Pantera.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man,
it was a phenomenal soundtrack. I just remember Rollins said, "You can't kill me." It's awesome. All right, so we're going to take this break. We're going to come back with some cool stuff. We've got a voice clip to play about OzCon, and then we're going to play a little bit of Know Your Host. So stay tuned after the break. We'll be back in just a moment.
And we're back.
Go ahead.
Now we're back. Look who's back. It's us. Honey, I Shrunk the Kid, too. We're coming back. That's the name of the show on Breaking the Panel. Play the clip, Paul.
Nick, what happened?
It works.
Diane, I got something real important to tell you.
Are you trying to tell me
the machine works? Do the kids know?
Well, yeah, the kids know.
That's great!
It's not that great.
Why?
I shrunk the kids, and the Thompson kids too. They're about this big. Threw them out with the trash.
What?
And the cold brew is happening.
You know what? You got no fear, Casey. I'll give you that. You jump in and you try. Hey, you flop around, but you try and you're fun, man. I appreciate it. The clip that you refer to here, here's a little bit of setup. Frank passed it on. This is Trent. I'm not going to murder his last name, but Trent from Toy Power, one of the great hosts over there. He's got a clip here on OzCon leaving. For a bit of context, our hometown is Adelaide, which is in the middle of the southern coast. Perth is the west coast, so it's our California. Sydney and Melbourne are east coast and very much viewed as the cities that get everything by anyone who doesn't live there. Here we go.
Hi, everyone. It's Trent here from Toy Power. Look, much in the same way that Charles McFall doing his outro might forget half the shows on his network, it seems like Oz Comic Con has half the capital cities in Australia, namely Adelaide, which is my hometown, and Perth. So we've been snubbed. We're off the roster for 2018. Just to get a sense of the reaction, I guess, from me, to be honest, between Oz Comic Con and Supernova, I can't actually tell the difference to these events. I must admit, I've probably been at events where I actually don't know who's putting the event on. They're held on the same venue. They follow exactly the same format, which is exhibitors. You've got a number of different stall holders that are selling different products and collectibles and memorabilia. And then you've got your celebrities that come along and you can get photos, signings, and attend their panels where they'll talk sort of for 40 minutes. So, for me, it's not a massive loss. You know, obviously, it would be nice to have the two events to choose from. But hopefully what this means is we're going to get one bigger, stronger event going forward. So, yeah, probably just like any sort of snubbing, the initial reaction is, you know, one of shock and dismay. But when you actually sit down and digest it, it's probably a lot of hyperbole, really. Sorry, Frank, probably can't understand my pronunciation. Hyperbole.
And hyperbole!
Around the naming of the convention, I guess it's fairly offensive to Wizard of Oz fans and anyone from the state of Kansas that Oz is used as an abbreviation for Australia.
Oh, he's going to get everybody but me.
It was better than the first name that they came up with, which was the Down Under Con. That first year had a real weird mix of it. So I think it was a good move to go to the Oz.
So there you go.
I don't mind that it's called OzCon. That's fine. I'm just saying there are multiple ways to spell Oz, and the one that would make more sense since you're talking about Australia would be AUS or even AUZ for you Australians that love your Z's where there should not be Z's.
Aren't they Z's in Australia too?
They are probably.
I as a man from the place that nobody cares
from Down Under,
I don't understand why you pick on them so much.
I'm not picking on them. I'm just saying.
Their bloody weather's already backwards.
And Trent,
I do what I can to understand this foreign land, and all I get is my feed filled with all this cricket stuff. And when I try to relate to Frank, he just shoots me down every time. And I try.
I do love that. He's like, oh no, Chris, sorry, only Australians get to talk about this. Let you down. But what's interesting, so Trent doesn't seem to care. He seems like it might actually be a benefit, you know, making the other event stronger and better, whatever. Yeah. Darren, however, I think is the opposite. He's the one who posted the sad post that they're leaving. I saw he's posting one of those petitions to keep OzCon coming to Perth. And so there's definitely some split feelings over at Toy Power, but that's an interesting take. And we definitely appreciate you taking the time, Trent, to send in a voice message.
And also to give us a geography lesson.
Yeah. And he called out Frank on an in-joke that is now spanning the network. So you guys need to go. Was it on your episode with the Justice League, Chris, that he did that?
The hyperbole?
Yeah.
I honestly don't even remember that coming up. Like, I just remember because I was watching.
I remember him saying that. I don't remember which episode it was on. But
yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. It's funny. And everybody's giving Frank a hard time. It's a lot of fun. So now we're going to play a fun little game called Get to Know Your Host. And this is something we were doing with Casey a little while back because he's new to the show. And like, well, Casey doesn't know us very well. We get to ask some questions of each other. So we're going to do a little playing with Paul and Chris today. Casey, do you have anything you want to start with? You want me to kick it off?
This one goes out to Bachelor number one. What's your idea of a perfect date?
I love that they just break.
So no. when people throw it to me, I just let them linger in silence. So,
oh man, I would love to see a Funny or Die where you are one of the bachelors as yourself, and they're asking questions. You just let it sit there. You're like, yeah, I don't care about answering that. It'd probably be only funny to us on the show because that's what you do to us all the time. But it still cracked me up. I'd like.
You could just stare stone faced into the camera. All right, I'm gonna pitch to Chris Wisdom first. So you might be the first or second biggest Superman fan that I know, and I know why you like him. I know how you like him, but you've never told me what made you like him from when you first discovered the character. And I think I'd like to hear that story if there is one.
Well, I mean, Christopher Reeve's portrayal of Superman was what introduced me to the character. I caught Superman, I don't know if it would have on HBO or TBS or whatever when I was younger. I don't remember the first time I saw it, but that would have been it. Shortly after, I know it probably was Superpowers after that. And then of course, you know, Super Friends would have been on in the mornings or in the afternoons in reruns along with Scooby-Doo, things like that. But the character himself, I think it's too easy to just call him that messianic figure and just pitch it to say that's what you should get out of him, because I don't know that he's not trying to take you anywhere other than to be good, be your best self. You know, it's not about a worship me. It's about do what's right for the sake of doing right, because it's what's right. And as corny as that is, like that's what the world needs, especially now. Like it's not about what you get out of the deal. It's about trying to do what's best for the collective, and hopefully everybody will do it, because it just raises us all up. As well as just, you know, when Superman's there, in comic book stories or whatever, you know, things might be down and bleak and horrible. But as soon as Big Blue shows up, I mean, there's reserve tanks the heroes didn't know they had, because there's so much hope that guy brings to the table with him. And then as far as comics, it was Crisis on Infinite Earths number 12. So you get to see, you know, two Superman and a Superboy just showing what it is to be Superman.
Throwing down, giving the anti-monitor what for.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry if that wasn't as sexy as you wanted.
No, it was good. I mean, I wasn't expecting you to just have this like grown ass adult awakening about Superman, where it's like you look at him as a kid and you're like, I'm gonna be that someday. And he spent years training and bathing under yellow sunlight.
You know what though? You know what though? Out of the four of us, Chris is the only one. Well, at least currently, I don't think any of us has ever previously done it either. Serving his country and going off to protect and defend. So, you know, maybe it did play into what he wanted to grow up to be.
Nah.
Would you be happy if people came up to you in a diner, like when you're in full regalia, and they were like, Rao, bless you for your service?
I would much
buy
prefer
you a
that.
Piece of pie.
You don't need to buy me a piece of pie, but I would much prefer that to like the awkward touching and handshaking that strangers feel compelled to do.
But they never would. They never would, because they won't recognize him. He has his glasses on.
I don't wear glasses anymore.
So, Clot, same to you. What made you wanted to grow up and be Superman?
I didn't.
You know,
Deal before Zod. All right.
Oh yeah, no. I don't think I know your early origins of who the comic that got you started in the loving comics or your favorite hero. So, what is like the singular moment, more or less, that got you into this road of nerddom?
It's 100% early 90s X-Men.
Da-na-na-na-na-na.
All right. And it's because Jimbo that I mentioned earlier, who is my sister's ex-boyfriend from when they were like, when she was in high school. But we're all great friends still to this day. he was hanging out with her all the time, and he got her into comics. And then they were, you know, just like always coming home with comics and stuff. And he'd hang out with me a lot. And I was like, this is super cool. And so I, you know, I got to thumb through, you know, early 90s X-Men. And then obviously the cartoon came out later on. But by that point, I moved to the country and didn't have access to Fox. So I never got to watch it. But yeah, no, it was 90s X-Men for sure. And of course, I traumatized myself at a young age by reading Spawn.
Mm. Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, because they got in early on that, and like my sister had like probably the first 50 or 60 issues. Yeah, that was. I don't think I'll ever forget the trauma of seeing the first issue with Violator when he takes a heart, and I was just like, comics aren't fun anymore.
Well, but
this ain't your daddy's comic.
At that point, hadn't video games stopped being fun because, you know, Sub-Zero and Scorpion were doing pretty much the same thing?
I was not allowed to get the first Mortal Kombat on my Game Boy because it was quote unquote too violent. But by the time Mortal Kombat 2 came out for Game Boy, it was fine.
But,
I thought you were only going to have the Super Nintendo version where you punch them and sweat comes out instead of blood.
Unless you put in the blood code.
The blood code.
Thanks, Electronic Gaming Monthly, you lying sack of
Meanwhile, just Mortal Kombat being too violent, meanwhile, my dad's watching like Arnold films and Stallone films. You know, so I saw like Alien and Predator. Well, not
Commando. Why don't you let off some steam?
Hey, Sully, yeah. Remember when I promised to kill you last? It seems the plan has changed.
It's so good.
And Total Recall. I mean, I'll never forget the triple boobies. anyways,
that middle one was paper mache. I can't believe it.
The trauma of my youth. No, but yeah, definitely. It was X-Men. And a little bit later on, it was I branched out a little bit, and that's when I discovered Spider-Man, and I really love Spider-Man as well. But yeah, it was X-Men. And like what I loved about X-Men is that those stories were like really adult, you know, compared to like I would thumb through I owned a couple Superman issues. I owned a couple Batman, you know, I'd try things, you know, we'd go to the local drugstore and I'd pick them up. But like the X-Men books were always like, they were simultaneously dealing with like big, like world scale ramification stuff, but then also interpersonal relationships all the time. And even at a young age, I realized that that was special and I really loved that. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's case you
are. But why symbiotes?
Why not?
Because they're freaking cool, man.
But why? Go ahead, Charles.
I was gonna say, you know, what else do you want to know? What else you want to ask?
What else do I want to know?
I can ask something. I just asked the last one, so it's your turn.
Well, I may have heard these stories, but I think this might be interesting for the readers. How did you first get started on the GSTU and podcasting in general?
Paul, let you go first.
No, I'll let you go first.
Well, I, in my rudimentary PowerPoint skills, so I was playing Marvel's Avengers Alliance, and I can't even remember how I happened upon this this podcast, but fell in love with it and stayed with it for the longest time and started writing into the show periodically. And I created the infamous Play Dom is closing memo. Okay. and so then I would just kind of shoot back and forth with these guys, and like I was big into all sorts of different podcasts, Kevin Smith and the Steve Dave guys and a bunch of others, WTF. So I was always finding, you know, listening to new stuff for, you know, I'd try an episode or two out, and if it didn't stick, it didn't stick. But then these guys started Giant Size Team Up. And so I'd been bugging Charles, you know, like on from the helicarrier, because I know his schedule is with the trivia and stuff that he does outside of the shows and the things like that. I know sometimes the schedule didn't always work out. So I know I was one of those guys that was hitting him the next day. If From the Helicarrier didn't post, I was like, hey, what the hell's going on, man? What the hell's going on? You're my morning commute show and I don't have it now. So thanks for fudging my day up, guy. So it started that way, was just being a fan and then asking, hey, is there anything I can do to help? You know, if you teach me how to post episodes, I can put them up for you, type of deal. So then that's how it happened, starting out with From the Helicarrier, right? And then Breaking the Panel, I started doing Breaking the Panel. It started out with doing maybe the letters. And I think I did a couple episodes of posting the actual show. But I think it started with the stuff that was too big would just post the viewer mail, basically, or the listener mail. And then started with Breaking the Panel around episode, 10? The Star Wars episode, I think that was the first episode that I remember writing show notes for and posting. So. Okay. Or at least, well, so I probably wrote the show notes for that, and then posting came a few episodes after that. So.
And neither did Charles.
you brought us Mike Zapcic as a guest, as our first guest on Breaking the Panel, actually. That's episode 6.
Yeah.
And I think the deal was you got us Zapcic, so we let you be on the show with Zapcic so you could ask some questions.
No, I don't think I was on that show.
No, he wasn't.
See, I was going back through some older episodes today, getting ready for the clip show, right? And I was like, oh, this is Chris's first time on the show. I'm going to record that and play it out for how I introduced him. And Klaus and I actually kind of mock you a little bit, as we do.
Some say he's still looking for that introduction.
Yeah. But then the way I introduced you was your return to Breaking the Panel. And so I'm like, oh, I think he was on the Zapcic show. I don't know. I wasn't listening to every second of every episode, but that was like episode 13 or 12 or something.
Yeah, I think Star Wars. I think that was the first episode. Yeah, so it would have been Star Wars episode 10, I'm pretty sure. That was the first episode that I was on.
Okay, I skipped it because I figured the movie panels were not really going to grab a whole lot of moments out of them. So. Yeah. But yeah, man, that memo where we reported it on the show is like, look, we cover everything, and we're not saying this is nude, but this was said to us directly, and it looks real, and you did just a phenomenal job. It looked like somebody crumpled it up and then photocopied it. And you did
that's because I did.
Yeah. Greatest. And I think it took like a year. It took like a whole year before he came back around and said, yeah, no, I made that up. That was me.
Yeah. And because I didn't post it. Like I didn't say, hey, check this out. I got this emailed to me or whatever. I was like, hey, I just found this on the internet as I was Google searching stuff.
Right. Which is actually how a lot of people had code divers and those kind of things listen to the show. And they would do that. Hey, we found this in Brazil and we found this here. And so he fell right into that track there. And it was pretty cool. I know there was a fight about getting him on the show. Cause as Klotz aptly said, I hate everybody until I like them. But yeah, we got you on the show and you stuck around and it was great.
Yeah, I don't know about great, but yeah, I'm here.
It's been it's certainly been a ride for no less than 89 episodes.
Now I will say, cause I almost clipped this like, no, cause the clip show is not going to have a whole lot of talking on it. It's just going to be a little bit of introduction of a segment and then here's some clips. It's going to be fun. It's going to be
don't count out the novelty of me writing a framing device for that show. No, just
right.
Yet.
You're right. But what I'm saying is there's no conditioning. So I wanted to say this instead of playing it without conditioning is that, cause I almost cut the clip of Chris's first time when he wanted to say something, but he wasn't used to being on a podcast, I think. And it's really early days. And is Klotz and I and Chris is filling in for Ibit, which is some big shoes to fill. But we'll give him that. And he was just passionate about some topic. And he's like, I want to say this and I want to. And I was like, come on, boy, you're on a podcast. And even Klotz started railing on you. And that smoothed you out. You're like, oh, yeah, you're going to come at me. And I was going to cut it like, see how far you've come. Because you have, Chris. I mean, you don't even miss a beat. You know what you want to say. You get in there. And I will say, you've done great, man. It's been awesome. Thanks, I'll probably do more gushing on the next episode. Show 100. That's what we're doing, 100.
We're just going to blow smoke up his ass, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what we do. I love you. So, Klotz, how did you get rolling with podcasting and then the GST.
All right. I think I've told this story before. I told it on FTH, but probably not on Breaking the Panel. Much like Chris, I was listening to some podcasts. I was listening to some of the Smodcast stuff, and I was listening to WTF with Mark Maron and some other stuff. But I started playing Avengers Alliance again, and I bumped in. It was actually right after Charles and Brian started their relationship with Kingfisher, where he was doing a weekly pre-recorded segment for the show and videos to go with it. And so I dug that. Like, I started watching Kingfisher's videos. I started listening to the show, and I really dug it. And I come from a background of competitive Magic the Gathering, like following that whole scene. So I was listening to, you know, podcasts for that on, from time to time. I was reading a lot of articles, watching a lot of videos, streams, and stuff like that. And so I went to, I hit Charles up and I was like, hey, I really like the show, but I think that there's an opportunity here that you guys are kind of missing on to maybe have some written articles or some extra content to kind of to pad things out a little bit. And I'd like to take a crack at doing some of it for you. And the other thing was, too, that I noticed that Brian and Charles were having a tough time interacting with their chat when they were streaming on Twitch while also keeping the flow of their conversation going and staying on track. So I was, you know, and Charles is kind of like, all right, well, we could try something out and see where it goes.
And so we were receptive to the writing part. We're like, oh yeah, you want to write? Go ahead. Don't touch my microphone.
Right.
Free and labor.
So, yeah, basically.
Yeah. So I started out writing some content for the website to go with, you know, to be like a secondary thing to the show. And then I was basically doing production assistant stuff during shows where I was in the call with Brian and Charles, but I was muted and I would just grab quotes from chat and stuff and I'd hit them in Skype so that they would see it and then they could read it and go with it and everything. And I think I talked like once or twice, like in the after show part, like, you know, before everything wrapped up, but the show was actually itself done. And then Brian had to be out for a week. And Charles, you know, was basically like, hey, do you want to come on and give it a go? Because we had talked online a little bit, like through a voice call and stuff. And we had talked on the phone a little bit. And I was like, yeah, sure, absolutely. And so we did, Charles and I did a whole episode of From the Helicarrier together, and it was fun, and I was really nervous, and I thought I was terrible, but apparently Charles was relatively impressed.
You didn't throw up or poop yourself, it's all right.
Yeah. We had a good conversation and everything, though. Like, we really kind of, we did well, and we hit it off, and so then Brian came back, and I guess Brian had listened to it and liked it, too, so... You know, Charles and Brian invited me back the very next week to do a panel show, like the three of us. And then I was on almost every episode for like the next year. And basically I came in as like a junior partner on From the Helicarrier. And then we together, the three of us, reshaped that show. We reformatted it a little bit and everything, you know, kind of changed the dynamic. And I honestly... You know, I think we all can collectively admit that we were at our best when all three of us were like super invested in the game and also in the show. And we were really firing on all cylinders and we had a great time and had a good run for a while. And then the show had become very bloated, right? So you guys used to do what, 90 minutes, I think it was, yeah. Tight for the most part. And then we were getting to like 2 hours every week at least.
Yeah.
Because
listener, you know, interaction.
Well, listener interaction, and we were also doing what we do on this show, which was pulling headlines that mattered, you know, to the comic fandom, if you will, talking about the TV shows a bit, talking about the movies, and so that ultimately led to us splitting off this show, Breaking the Panel, and also ultimately led to us forming the network because, you know, we noticed that like we had people kind of coming together and like we had done some panels and stuff and just really everything was clicking great. And so, you know, we went into the, you know, Brian, Charles, and I initially founded the network and went into business together. And, you know, I honestly still give props to Charles and Brian for giving me a big break in that regard. And here we are. And then Chris.
And honestly, to be completely fair, some of my favorite episodes were when Paul was had stopped playing the game 4 weeks prior to that episode, and they were still making it to the sales. He's just like, yeah, there's some on sale. I really don't care. Charles, I'm going to tell you for the 20th time on this episode alone, I don't even play the game. Screw you and your 20%.
Which was great because, well, that was the other thing is like, we would often get into some really solid conversations on the show. And the one time we had the 20% argument where Charles seems to think 20% in a video game is a small number.
Out of 100%, it's a small number.
It's not.
It's one in five, man.
A small number.
No, not in video game terms. I'll stand by that until the day we both.
I know you.
But yeah, you know, the thing was after I stopped playing the game, I was getting some serious shit from a lot of the hardcore players in chat and stuff, and they're just like, blah blah blah, and I'm like, because I was always the guy, like, I was the guy who was the first to call BS on Playdom, pretty much every time. I'd be like, yo, what they did with this patch or whatever, this was bogus, that was bogus, you know, that kind of stuff, and you know, we would talk about it and everything, and generally arrive at the conclusion that it was fine, but that there were some serious flaws. But those guys would come after me. So like when I wasn't playing anymore, I would just sit there and chat and be like, I'm gonna mute my mic and now I'm gonna type to you fools in chat and tell you why you're wrong.
Yeah.
And for if any of you are still with us today, if you've stuck with us through 2 years of breaking the panel and you're still listening, we love you and I love those times. I still love going toe-to-toe with some of you guys. That was what was great about From the Helicarrier is we had a passionate fan base who really, you know, wanted to just be part of the conversation. And it was always fun to be in Twitch chat week after week.
I am trying to find your debut on From the Helicarrier because you can go to thehelicarrier.com and we'll put this in the notes. It's spelled HELICARRIER. If you don't know, thehelicarrier.com. We still have all the archives up. There was a few episodes that were lost. There was a crash with the website at some point, and we lost a number of episodes. But I've been trying to dig through the archives here to see, so we can link your direct episode of when you made your first appearance. And you want to know why Chris does the notes? Go look at these notes. Because I literally basically just copied and pasted from our show notes. Here's an example. This week on From the Helicarrier, we are so excited about the news. If it has tip turrets and fan week is coming. News, Christmas collectible gifts, sweet baby Jesus. Then I put some link on forums. Then weapons, rad sniffer, can opener, golden fan. I mean, these are my notes. They're horrible.
Rad sniffer? The thing wasn't even newsworthy.
It was at the time. We had something to talk about. I mean, these are my notes. There's no flow. It's literally just kind of a bullet point of this is what we talked about.
Well, you were a hot and fast, quick and to the point kind of a show, man.
Yeah, we were.
Sometimes you got to hit them with some bullets, even if it's in word form.
That reminds me, the craziness of the FTH era, weeks when we got like Spec Ops that dropped, we'd do our normal show on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. then, like, if it dropped on Friday and we could get everybody together, we would do another show on Friday for the Spec Ops and stuff. And I recall the whole reason Breaking the Panel probably exists is because Playdom was so bad at releasing content on a regular basis that we started basically filling time talking about all that extra stuff on the episodes when we were Newslight. And so we can actually probably thank Playdom's sporadic release schedule for spawning the show, because I don't think we ever would have started doing that if they didn't.
I can actually tell you the birth. I know the exact moment that we conceived. I mean, I know when I got everybody pregnant with Breaking the Panel.
when a mommy podcast and a daddy podcast are very much in love.
I could probably search on the site and find this one. It was in the news, in the comics, Bobby, Iceman, was being outed as gay. And it wasn't even reported he was outed. It's like, oh, Bobby is gay in the comics. And there's this societal uproar. And L.A. Collins, who is a friend of the show and a friend of mine, and she's also, I was about to say, a very poorly worded choice, but she is a lesbian. And we were talking about, we're like, hey, we're going to cover this. What? Yes?
Sure. Correction. Sure. Ellie's bisexual.
That's right. Sorry.
And she's very adamant about that.
Connected, so. She is connected to that community more than three straight guys were, is my point. Sorry. That's my point. We're like, oh, you know, we're going to talk about how it's we were going to celebrate the comics embracing LB. I'm sorry, the letters. Yeah.
You can actually say them in any order because it's an acronym that doesn't spell out a thing like SHIELD or whatever.
SHIELD.
Although it'd be cool if it did.
Yeah. And she, being a friend of mine, following some of the stuff we posted, she listened to some of the shows, and she's like, oh no, this is a horrible thing. It's not to be celebrated because he didn't come out. He was out. I was like, oh, this will make for an interesting topic. It was a slow news week. And so we had her on, and we just did a segment. Now, we talked about the game news, and she engaged, and we talked about other stuff with the game. But we did this segment in the middle of the show about it, and it was great. Ibbitt ate it up. Klotz ate it up. I ate it up. I mean, we're like, oh, this is amazing. We're talking about societal issues through our fandom. Our fans hated it. They're like, well, that's great content, but I really just want to hear I just want to talk about the game. I come here just for the game. And at that moment, we knew we had something that we needed to do something with. And ultimately, 6 months, a year down the road, Breaking the Panel launched. Where that went. Mm-hmm. What about you, Casey? You know, that's what what brought you? I know what brought you to Giant Size Team Up, and you can talk about that if you like. Actually, I do want you to talk about that. But what got you into podcasting then ultimately here?
Well, it was May of 2015, and for avid listeners, you may be aware of my work, poorly plugged, if anything, over at the Bad Coyote Funky podcast, which you can listen to Thursday nights on twitch.tv/Bad Coyote Funky. I do that show. They're my favorite side chick now. You know, these guys are my main squeeze. What can I tell you? You know? I got a new hotness with Breaking the Panel. But I first engaged in that in May of 2015. My buddy Sergio, the original Bad Coyote himself. Still hate the name. he's like, I need a more about comic books than anybody I know. I want you to do a podcast with me. And I was like, all right, sure. So I met a bunch of other great guys, Greg, Booster Greg, Dave the Bearded Menace, and Amber. We had a genuine girl on our show, fellas.
Wow. That
was, yeah, look at us, really ahead of the curve in 2015. things went great for a long time. But there were other commitments and stuff, you know, like you had to write an article a week for the website, and I would do things like comic book reviews and whatever. But I, you know, like all things, when you do something for a long enough time, sometimes you get a little lax and, you know, you miss a couple episodes here and there. So I've been on that show maybe like 75% of the all the episodes we've done since then. We're still ongoing. But I bumped into, that was my first exposure podcasting, and I don't really know how good I am at it, but I'm trying to develop a voice for radio in case I ever need to take my talents elsewhere.
That's the first step.
Yeah, right. A face only radio could love. But I'm trying to recall how I bumped into you guys, and I want to say that I remember it fondly.
But I can't.
No, this would have been 2016. I was aware of you guys from the Helicarrier and playing Avengers Alliance.
I've got a question that I don't think has ever been directly answered. Did you actually listen to From the Helicarrier?
Yeah, of course. I just never wrote into the show because I was like, these guys kind of know what they're talking about, but I think I might be progressively ahead of them. Because I was like a sadistically dedicated player where I would actively keep an eye on my friggin' energy bar. And like every time it bipped to 10, I would like have the game flipped open and do something like immediately. I was on that. Like I scheduled my sleep schedule around 6 hour shifts so I could wake up with a full bar and have not wasted any time.
That's what timers and alarms are for. I don't know why you're watching it.
Listen, it was smarter.
See earlier in the show.
Where the timer goes off.
Because it was time for you to get out there, agent.
That's it. But yeah, no, I listened to the show and I never really wrote in because I wasn't, you know, I didn't really want to, I guess, impose, you know, because you guys seemed like a big deal and, you know, you were. And now, of course, having done podcasts myself and whatnot, you know, nobody's a big deal. You're just regular people on the other end of a microphone. You know, like any professional who does what they love for a living, like a comic book artist, they're just regular, you know, they're regular folk who are extremely talented in what they do and gain a following because of that. So when you made a Facebook post, because we were Facebook friends just by virtue of being allies in the game, you know, you put out a call to arms for people who would want to guest spot, you know, on Breaking the Panel, which I don't know how new of a show it was when I hopped in. Maybe somewhat new. Do you remember what the first episode I was on? Was it a movie panel?
No, it would have been after Chris joined full time and he was going to be going out for training, which is
I think it was that first summer. So summer of 16.
Everything comes full circle.
Yeah. Well, you know, we definitely talk about that.
But was I on your Logan panel too? Because I know I've come back at least, I've done two, I think, with you guys.
So you've done regular episodes and at least two panels. Back panels.
Well, we'll find that walk down memory lane in 2 weeks on the BTP clip show.
Yes, you were on the Logan show.
I was. Okay, great. Yeah, and that was where I first met Travis too. And became an avid fan of his show. As you might remember, when you recontacted me again, I went full friggin' fanboy. finding out that you guys were in super, you know, you formed a Justice League of Network in cahoots together. Which was all I may not have recognized at the time. But, and then the story so far, like 2 months ago, I was asked to pinch in as a fourth chair, you know, in the absence of Brian Ibbett being on the show and, you know, other panel changes, but I've been welcomed into this family with more than open arms. And there's, you know, it's great to have such a you know, a positive group to do something with once a week, and even really more than once a week, because we're, you know, we're hanging out online and such. But that's my secret origin, I guess.
Very cool. Yeah, I think we were in a podcaster hangout group or something. Cause I put out, and maybe it was on my personal page. I don't remember.
It was definitely on your personal page. Cause you wouldn't have put it on like, what was it? The Revengers. What was the name of the Facebook group? I mean, you were probably in a million of them.
Yeah.
I was only in one of them.
I think by the time I started after the game sunsetted and I started putting, you know, getting out of all the groups, I think ultimately
and purging friends.
Yeah. I put out the call to arms and only two came back. Only two, because I said, hey, anybody's into comics and geekdom, we're going to have a rotating guest spot. Because we'd always talked about a four seat being a guest spot. And then with Chris saying, hey, I'm going to be out, right? Well, we need a third person here. We felt like last night, I felt like we needed that. And definitely put out the call to arms. You and Tony P. Henderson were the two that said, yeah, I'd love to do
that. Friend of the show, Tony P. Henderson of Geek Versus.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, but some other people like, it'd be cool, but they just never worked out. You know, I think we had John Lee Hart on one time and a few others that were cool guest spots. But you two guys were like, yeah, no, we know our stuff and we love our stuff. And we love what you guys are doing. And you know, after I saw your photo, after a while, once we really started interacting, I'm like, oh, yeah, I do remember seeing you down in my little icon bar. But as long as I didn't even know we were Facebook friends.
Yeah.
That hurts, man. We're like,
I sneak up on you with friendship.
I like, well, to be fair, because of the game and because of some of my podcasting stuff, because of the game, my rule that, ow, I just poked the crap out of my finger with a twist tie. That was not fun. But my rule of when I was playing that game was I will accept any friendship because I wanted to play with people in the game. I needed to fill up my ally bar, all that jazz. And I skyrocketed to almost 2,000 Quoty Fingers friends because of that game.
Jeez.
So when somebody goes, we're friends on Facebook, like, yeah, that honestly doesn't mean crap because I got people all over the world that don't even speak their language that were, I mean, I've been purging that since the game, but we were friends because we played the game. But right. No, Casey's actually friendly.
Aha!
You know, I didn't say we were friends, I just said friendly.
I'm playing the long con, Charles.
Matt Stickman, you always got to invest, man.
Yeah.
All right. It's about that time. And I love having this moment to share these stories. And actually, show 100, we'll probably get into a lot more of that kind of stuff. And
yeah, we'll even get the secret origin of Charles McFall.
Chris and Klaus are like, no, it's no secret. Don't ask him. I think he'll take up. No. But now I'm all.
How did one man become the rock god of podcasting? Inquiring readers want to know.
Well, you know, my secret origin is I actually had a chair thrown at me at a con, and that gave me all my secret superpowers.
Hit by a radioactive chair. Yeah.
So stuff like that. Absolutely. We want your questions. Show 100 is next week, and we want your questions. We want your interactions. We're going to reminisce about our favorite episodes, possibly some of our in-jokes. We'll explain some of the in-jokes that go on that we reference. It'll be a good time of where we came from, where we want to go, and hopefully comments and calls from you. And if you want to be a part of that, you can email us btp@giantsizeteamup.com. That's B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel, @giantsizeteamup.com. And of course, if you go to giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel, on the right hand side of the screen is a nice tab that lets you click the link and leave a 90-second voice message with any device that has a microphone, and we'd love to hear from you next week. Gents, do you have anything else you'd like to throw out in preparation for next week, just as a recap to this show? Anything you'd like to say before we go out?
Hux was indeed a Weasley, and we will probably get to hear the sweet, sweet voice of one Blazing Defender's mother again.
Too soon. We'll explain that next week. Actually, you know, I'm hoping Brian will send something in. Brian helped, and we'll talk about him and how he helped us found all this stuff and what Giant Size Team Up is. And just so you know, we keep referencing Giant Size Team Up. If for some reason you're like, is that like a nickname for Breaking the Panel? I don't understand. No, Giant Size Team Up Network is our podcasting network of great, amazing shows with a lot of amazing hosts going on over there at GiantSizeTeamUp.com. You like what we do, you're going to love what goes on this network for sure. So check out all the amazing hosts and shows that are there and subscribe to all your favorite podcast players. And let's see, let's go here. Chris, where can they find you on the internet, my friend?
The Twitter thing. They can find me there.
You get mad when I forget you. You're so bitter of us.
I'm just trying to make sure that everybody knows that I understand that I matter just as much as Charles makes me feel that I matter, which is not at all.
I'm so sorry. Entirely accurate.
You're getting flowers at work next week. I promise. I promise. People will know your love.
No, you can find me at
gay.
Iceman.
Okay, now that was so appropriate because so many times me and Chris have talked over Klotz, and Klotz just, you know, I've been waiting for two freaking years to step on one of you guys. There you
go. I mean, Charles talks about sending flowers. I'm gonna ching it up.
This is the best fraternity I've ever been allowed into.
All right, try again, Chris. Go ahead.
You can find me at Christoph Wisdom on the Twitters or in All Things Wisdom, whichever one of those is my handle and whichever one's the other thing.
That's awesome. Even he doesn't know, folks.
This is some serious low rent plugging here.
That's almost as good as a good Bikini Coyote show plugging.
Yes. Classic. Yeah. What he is referring to, folks, is the Bad Coyote Funky podcast, a podcast that broadcasts live on twitch.tv/badcoyotefunky, and is where I am originally from and currently a part of. Next week, or tomorrow, or whenever you might be listening to this, go find the episode in question. We're talking about Netflix's, Disney's, Marvel's The Punisher. All 13 goody goody gumdrop episodes of eye gouging, mirror shattering enticement. So hop along and listen to the Funky Bunch.
Yeah. Can you feel it, baby?
Gather around with your boys and talk about old Frankie Castle. Should be a rousing romp for an hour and a half. Now featuring, as always, secret questions in which we look increasingly ridiculous.
Klotz, where can we find you, sir?
Please don't.
Fair enough.
Did somebody say at Soapbox GSTU? On Twitter?
You can you tweet at me if you want, but I never read them. No, I check my Twitter about once a year when we're at Dragon Con. So, you can hit me up there.
Start following it now. We'll eventually repurpose it into a Twitter for another upcoming show.
Someday I might release other things that I've done.
Paul, you know, I just had this great idea. What if you got together with the guys from Botched and did a show about Stranger Things?
That would be so cool. That's a great idea. We should totally do that.
Oh, so, man.
You know what? They got picked up for a third season, so you guys should definitely start working on episodes and then be ready to roll out and prep for season 3.
I think we could hit that deadline. Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
I would love to hear that.
Man, what if, am I right?
All right, well, you can find everything that I work on, or at least 90% of everything that I work on, because I'm not sure if I have it fully updated, but charlesmcfall.com is where you can find all that stuff. And there is a show to go along with the much mocked title of Rock Out of Podcasting, rockoutofpodcasting.com, where I put my 2 cents into the world.
It's your guide to life, the universe, and everything, courtesy of one Charles McFall.
Every episode is number 42. All right, so next, I'm excited about hitting 100. It's a milestone. I mean, it is, and it's episode 100. It's not actually our 100th show because we don't number the panel, so it's actually taken us longer to get to this milestone than
I counted. Technically, it's 12.
12 episode, 112.
Yeah. Well, we've done, as of Justice League, it would be 12 panels on top.
Gotcha.
Of now 99 episodes, so 111.
But I don't know.
Right now,
I don't the cover thon ones either. So,
you're good.
Casey seems to be obsessed with numbers.
Wow. You know what I'm obsessed with? Wrapping a show up.
That's all, folks.
Tune in next week to hear Chris say,
you know, we might not put all of our content out on time, but it worked for these Image Boys, didn't it?
Who?
Charles.
We'll end it there. Just cut it. Mike, cut it. Cut it right at the end of that joke.
Jesus. That was the longest fucking outro.
'Breaking the Panel' is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.